Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. For all of you listening in over 170 countries, to the tens of millions who've downloaded from Facebook just in the last month, I welcome you. This is going to be one of the most densely packed programs for information I've ever done. You're going to learn, of course, about health and nutrition, since new information on exercising, enhancing your gut flora, the good bacteria, optimal selenium levels can help give you a better mood, especially if you're a younger person, eating certain foods to protect against ovarian cancer, I'll give you that list, 80% of heart attacks in men can be prevented through a healthy lifestyle behavior, from something that can benefit everyone, solitude, it can enhance your relationships, from Dr. Suzanne White, Psychology Today, and then brand new research that verifies something I was doing at the Institute of Applied Biology 30 years ago, but they've just confirmed it in this study. Direct brain-to-brain connection established between humans. That's right. Scientists have successfully linked the brains of two people, allowing one person to control the hands of another using just their thoughts. This was done at the University of Washington. More on that and its implications. Something that you have not heard, this will be an exclusive today, a very influential, highly respected, pro-vaccine PhD immunologist has said something. I will play you the clip, and then this should end once and for all the idea that vaccines are safe and effective for any baby. Also, the U.S. child poverty remains highest in 20 years. The newest on why GMOs are not good. 8 things you should never feed your dogs or cats. Also, the media, including the left, is praising President Obama and his Asian trip. Well, what's he there for? The Trans-Pacific Partnership will challenge that. You heard all the media talking about the good news on unemployment. No, it's just the opposite. We've been lied to. I'll give you the facts. And we will continue with our series on conversations with remarkable minds today. Dr. Mario Martinez, he is going to talk about biocognitive sciences, meaning how to change our beliefs and myths that limit our health and well-being. And in our film, Poverty, Inc., I have more people than I've ever had in any two documentaries before. One of them was speaking up against Wall Street. Normally, these are very mild conversations when you hear them in the media. Let me play you a clip from Max Keiser challenging Goldman Sachs. That'll be today. Let's begin. We know that we have to have healthy gut bacteria. It's essential for our well-being. That's why every time you eat sugar, or alcohol, or bread, or meat, you are adversely affecting this bacteria. In effect, you're creating more bad bacteria than good bacteria, and that can lead to heart disease and cancers. But the opposite is also true, and that's the good news. Every time you have vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds and legumes and grains and pulses and tubers and fresh herbs, and you are creating new good bacteria. Here's the latest on why this is important. This comes from the peer-reviewed journal Gut. It says, does good health merely hinge on genetic factors, or is there more? Quote, new research from the University of Cork, that's in England, by the way, suggests that good health begins more so in the gut, in the diversity of stomach microbes, which can be heavily influenced by daily exercise levels. This has shocked scientists, showing how exercise can enhance the diversity of microbes in the gut, strengthening one's ability to metabolize energy and ward off pathogens. trillions of microorganisms live in the adult microbiome of the human gut. These bacteria colonies are responsible for breaking down toxins and utilizing vitamins and essential amino acids. They are the backbone of the immune system, assisting efficient metabolism while preventing invaders from entering the blood. In this study, a team of researchers examined blood samples from 40 rugby players. The rugby players underwent a training program full of intensive exercise workouts. Additionally, the men answered questionnaires during this four-week period about what they ate, how often, listing over 187 food items. The results were compared with results of a group of equally matched men who did not exercise. That's the only difference. And they found that there was, quote, exercise practically accelerated metabolic processes initiated in the gut, helping rugby players harness the energy from food more efficiently with different gut microbes and diversity thereof. The, quote, the rugby players had a much greater total number of gut microbiota and diversity. They had all these extra bacteria. So what's the takeaway message? Historically, we believe that if you had fermented foods like miso soup or sauerkraut or probiotics, that it would build good bacteria in the gut. It does. But we've never known until today that exercise in and of itself creates a diversity and quantity of good gut bacteria. That's brand new and very important reason for all of us to exercise 5 days a week. Now, this is an important study done at Leiden University in the Netherlands, and it says the following, quote, the effects of poor eating habits on the immune system last long after the diet improves. Quote, while we may be familiar with the dangers of eating too much processed foods, the actual effects of this indulgence may be far more damaging to our health than previously imagined. Almost everyone knows that improved eating habits will most likely improve a range of health measures, but researchers have warned that the effects that a poor diet have on the immune system can persist even after eating habits improved. Writing in the Journal of Leukocyte Biology, the team behind the new study found that even after successful treatment of atherosclerosis, including lowering blood cholesterol and a change in dietary habits, the effects of an unhealthy lifestyle still affect the way the immune system functions. Okay. Now, what does this say? This is based upon epigenetics and not just biochemistry. Let me explain. Everything is a matter of the larger epa, meaning the large, over. That means the environment we're in. The office you work in, the home you live in, the people that are in your life, the nature of the energy you share with the people in your life. Are they dominant, submissive? Are they positive, negative? Do they laugh with you or make you cry? All of this impacts our DNA. So even when we change the circumstances, it does not automatically change the DNA. That takes a whole separate effort, working on the epigenetic level. Can we change the epigenetics and hence change the DNA? Yes, we can. That's the good news. But it's not immediate, because we don't realize that when we are in a conscious moment of making a positive choice, creating, thinking, analyzing, projecting, we're also simultaneously functioning on a subconscious level. They're both engaged simultaneously, as if we have two parts of the brain functioning at the same time. And the other is undermining us, self-sabotaging us, creating doubt, uncertainty, insecurity. Even while we're trying to be positive and go forward, the subconscious is, because of previous experience in our life, is telling us, no, don't do that. You're not ready. You're not prepared. You don't have the resources. You're not motivated. You'll fail at it. You won't like what you're about to do, and hence we self-sabotage. That is why, even when these people change their diet from a killing disease, atherosclerosis, they still had the epigenetics there. Therefore, it's more than just changing a diet. You have to change the belief system. I've said this many times. I don't know how many people fully understood what I've said. I remember the first time I said this was at my father's funeral, when all of my relatives were together and we were talking. And all the cancer killed your dad. I said, no, the cancer did not kill my dad. His belief system killed him. And there was this kind of pause where they looked at me with this notion of, what are you talking about? And I didn't go elaborate on it because they were not interested in that. But I've said this many times. It's not cancer, heart disease, or diabetes that kill you. It's a component. But ultimately what kills us, what causes us to fail in a relationship, what causes us to go broke, what causes us to be in any environment we're in, is our belief system and the inability to control the negative aspects and to promote the positive. That's epigenetics. Next up, optimal selenium levels linked to better mood for young adults. This is a good study from the University of Otago in New Zealand, published in the Journal of Nutrition, and it says, quote, maintaining levels of selenium, that would be garlic and onion, for example, and sesame seeds, tahini, may improve mood and be associated with low risk of depression symptoms. That's excellent. Quote, in young adults, an optimal range of serum selenium between 82 and 85 micrograms per liter was associated with reduced risk of depressive symptomatology, end quote. Okay. Well, 200 micrograms a day, one little tablet a day, and you are no longer in that range. You're above it. So, for all young people, not only does selenium help prevent cancer and DNA damage, now it's showing it can help give us better mood. Think of all the children who've been diagnosed wrongly, in my opinion, with ADHD, and the 8 million adults wrongly diagnosed with adult ADHD. It doesn't exist. By the way, you hear me saying this a year from now, when my film that is still in post-production, Manufacturing Madness, comes out, you will see interviewed on the streets in front of the American Psychiatric Association's annual meeting, 22 psychiatrists. They're asked this simple question. Is there any test of any kind that determines a person's brain chemical imbalance? Everyone said no. Is there any test that determines a person has a psychiatric disorder? The answer is no. Is there any objective way of determining the person has bipolar versus schizophrenia? The answer is no. So then the question is, and you'll see them asked and answered this, then why would you diagnose someone with a condition that will be labeling them the rest of their life, monikered forever, giving them medications that have not been shown to do anything? And the answer is following the protocol. In any case, to help a lot of kids no longer be diagnosed, the least we can do is clean up their diet. That's something that definitely impacts their mood. Getting rid of the caffeine, the sugar, and getting them some healthy foods. If every youngster in America, every toddler, youngster, teenager were to take a healthy smoothie in the morning and have their omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin D and a B-complex, you wouldn't have all these kids bouncing off the wall. For the women, to protect you from ovarian cancer, according to the latest studies, this was a joint study from Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, as well as the University of East Anglia in England. Here's what you can do. And this was based upon the Nurses' Health Study of 171,940 women between 25 and 55. This is a large study over 20 years. And why is this important? Because the epithelial ovarian cancer begins in the lining of the ovaries. They account for 85-90% of all ovarian cancer and are the most dangerous types. And about 70% of cases are not diagnosed until an advanced stage. Here's the good news. Researchers reviewed the diets of the women looking for a class of antioxidants called flavonoids. The antioxidant flavonoids can be derived from subclasses. Flavonones, flavanols, anthocyanins, there's your grapes. Flavan-3-ols, the polymeric flavonoids. Now, where do you get these? You get these in green tea, in apples, in grapes, in citrus. That's where you're getting the majority of these, and that will help lower the risk of epithelial ovarian cancer substantially. So oranges, orange juice, black tea, green tea, blueberries, pomegranate, onions, apples. Those are your best to take. Plus, I would throw in flaxseed is a potent ovarian cancer killer. Fermented soy is also good to help resistant ovarian cancer. Olive oil can reduce ovarian cancer risk by 32%. Soy, organic non-GMO soy foods can reduce ovarian cancer by 48%. Frankincense beats chemotherapy in late-stage cancer cells. So there are at least 30 proven natural anti-ovarian cancer agents. Curcumin, genistein from kudzu, red clover and soy, resveratrol from grapes, grape juice. And finally, 80% of heart attacks in men can be prevented through healthy lifestyle behavior. We're going to have about 150 cases of heart attacks this year. That's according to Medscape. And what can we do? Well, what we can do is simple things. According to the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, we can exercise, we can eat more, quote, fruits and vegetables, nuts, and healthy whole grains. That's associated with a 20% reduction in heart attacks. So lifestyle changes. And, of course, de-stressing is important, giving up the alcohol. Oh, and by the way, from our public health segment today, this is from Brian Shohavy, Health Impact News. There is the Kenyan Catholic Doctors Association. These are all physicians in Africa. And they sent a letter to UNICEF and the World Health Organization challenging them for, quote, sterilizing millions of girls and women under cover of an anti-tetanus vaccination program sponsored by the Kenyan government. Now, the Kenyan government denies there's anything wrong with the vaccine, says it's safe. But the Kenya Catholic Doctor Association saw evidence to the contrary and had six different samples of the tetanus vaccine from various locations around Kenya sent to an independent laboratory in South Africa for testing. The results confirmed their worst fears. All six samples tested positive for HCG antigen. Now, to this audience, you know that the HCG antigen is used in anti-fertility vaccines, but was found present in tetanus vaccines targeted to young girls and women of childbearing age. Dr. Narge of the Kenyan Catholic Physicians Association stated in a bulletin released yesterday, quote, "This proved right, our worst fears, that this World Health Organization campaign is not about eradicating neonatal tetanus, but a well-coordinated, forceful population control mass sterilization exercise using a proven fertility-regulating vaccine. The evidence was presented to the Ministry of Health before the third round of immunization, but was ignored," end quote. And also, he and others brought up several points about the mass tetanus vaccine program in Kenya that caused the Catholic physicians to become suspicious. And it was used in 54 hospitals, 83 health centers, 17 medical nursing schools. And it was done in a secret campaign. It is an anti-fertility campaign. And so they've been caught. The evidence is there. And, of course, we've been telling you for some time that they've been vaccinating people in Africa with anti-fertility vaccines, but not telling them. That's the eugenicist way of controlling undesirable populations. I'm Gary Nall. We have a lot to share, from what you shouldn't be feeding your dog and cat, xylitol. It's one of those ubiquitous sweeteners, good for humans, not for animals, your dogs and cats. Chocolate. Chocolate's great for humans, not for dogs and cats. And along with coffee and soft drinks, contains a compound known as methyl xanthines, which pests ingest and ends up giving them hyperactivity, and you don't want that. Avocados, great for humans, bad for your birds and everything else in the animal kingdom. I'd stay away from avocados. Macadamia nuts, not good for them. Grapes and raisins, not good for them. And yeast doughs, not good for them. Over on another front, this is from Dana Gabriel from Activist Post. And this is in response to the media not focusing upon the context and the reality of this big meeting with the president in Asia. He's there to promote the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Let me explain it this simply. If the Trans-Pacific Partnership passes, and now that the House, the Senate, and the White House are all working together to get this passed, it will destroy all the unions. They're dead. It'll be over. It'll destroy virtually our entire environmental movement. You won't be able to protect any part of our environment. It will destroy all of our food safety, because any country can sell us any garbage they want, and we can't say no. Otherwise, we will be sued by corporations, and the corporations will be represented at this world court by lawyers working for the corporations. Their judgment is final. There is no appeal. Our U.S. Supreme Court, our state courts, our EPA, nothing will exceed the authority of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. At every level, it is a bad idea. They'll be able to gas hydrofrack no matter what your ordinance is. They'll be able to sell genetically engineered material anywhere they want. They could exploit all of our national forests. Get an idea that this is a treaty from hell. But so, too, was NAFTA. And thank President Clinton and his wife and all of the dysfunctional, and are there any other but dysfunctional corporate Democrats, and all the celebrities in Hollywood without brains that supported them. NAFTA, GATT, World Trade Organization, CAFTA. We do not need any of these. And yet, we were told how good they would be for us. Here's what he says, quote, the Globalist Control Council on Foreign Relations, isn't the head of that the head of The Nation magazine? Yes, what a coincidence. Have called on the U.S. to work more closely with Canada and Mexico to build a new North American partnership for the future. The pivot to North America would focus on greater trilateral cooperation in areas such as energy. There's your Trans-Pacific Partnership, and there's your there's the Keystone Pipeline. Economic competitiveness, border management, law enforcement, and continental perimeter security. Throughout the years, the incremental steps towards a North American Union have been used to further chip away at the sovereignty of all three NAFTA countries. The Council on Foreign Relations-sponsored Independent Task Force on North America. Well, that sounds like a good task force. The Independent Task Force on North America. Okay, we can trust it. Co-chaired by retired General David Petraeus. Uh-oh. Former president of the World Bank, Robert Zoellick, recently released their report, North America, Time for a New Focus. You think? The task force maintained, quote, now is the moment for the U.S. to break free of old foreign policy biases, to recognize that a stronger, more dynamic, resilient continental base will increase U.S. power globally. Will it? Well, not a good idea. From top to bottom, they're playing the system. They got all the characters in place. And they'll push it through, all for our benefit. Well, how's it work for you? How's everything work for you? How are all the institutions working for you? Are we better because of them? Are we all having a better quality of life? Guess so, because I was just listening this morning to one of our sister stations broadcasting about, gee whiz, you know, how good President Obama is and what he's doing for us. I watched Al Jazeera last night on that show where the guy seems clueless about his homework, about, this Trans-Pacific, Trans-Pacific Partnership, that's a good thing. And the reporter from one of these think tanks, oh, yes, this would help create jobs. No, it wouldn't. It would cost jobs. This would give better quality of life. No, it wouldn't. It would cap what you could earn. We'd be sent down to the dark ages when it comes to wages. And, oh, yes, that Keystone Pipeline, that's really important that gets done. Oh, yes, and now it will. No, it's not a good thing on any level. So the public is being lied to. Let me just give you an example of how serious the lies are. We were told we have unemployment at 5.8%, that 214,000 new jobs were created in October. All right, let's just, instead of being like everyone else, let's just look at the actual numbers. And what we see is different. For example, we see that almost all of the 181,000 are in lowly paid private services, near minimum wage. 5,000 were government-created jobs. 27,100 jobs were in retail. That's a low wage. Wholesale trade was 8,500. Transportation warehousing, 13,000. And an awful lot, 48,900, were bartenders and waitresses. Well, that's not good. Jobs that don't pay a lot. But also 37,000 new jobs are created in professional business services. They'll make a little more money. But almost all these were temporary work, 24,000 or 65% of those jobs. Temporary, just for the season, till the holidays. Also, here's what they didn't tell you. Amidst the media hype of the 214,000 new jobs, disturbing facts. Job cuts rose 68% from the previous month, 12% from the previous year. So far, there have been 414,591 job eliminations in 2014. 51,000 of those in October. Where are the job cuts? Retail store closings, 38,948. Where stores closed, people lost their work. And Hewlett-Packard, 5,000 well-paying jobs, gone. That brings, just this year, Hewlett-Packard, 21,000 jobs. Like Microsoft, 6,500 jobs out of 55,511 just this year. All right? That's gone. In October, the electronics industry cut 1,600 jobs thus far this year. The electronic industry, 18,000 jobs. The communication industry has cut 20,000 jobs. So what this means is, in the real world of real economics, that we're hiring part-time workers near the bottom of the wage perimeter, and we have right now over 16 million Americans who don't look for work because they can't find work. They're completely eliminated from the unemployment roll. But then so are people who are wanting to work full-time and can't find full-time work. So they're considered if they work an hour as a part of the employment picture. If you add up how many people are actually part-time, underemployed, or non-working at all, they've given up the permanent unemployed in America, the unemployment rate is 24%. We're right up there with Spain and Greece. The truth is what we need. Not everyone being complicit, including the left media, in the lies and distortions. And just as one more caveat here, this is from the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics, an article entitled Seen But Not Heard, Children in U.S. Federal Policy on Health and Health Care. U.S. child poverty remains at the highest rate in 20 years. Quote, nearly one in four U.S. children lives in poverty, with similar proportions not getting enough food to eat. How many kids then don't get enough food each day? 18 million children don't have enough food each day to eat. Have you heard about it? Have you seen it? Anyone talking about it? The answer is no. When it comes to challenging the people who are behind this, the people who are making billions of dollars, the media is virtually silent, except for one person. Here is a debate between a professor at a major financial think tank and Max Kaiser when it comes to Goldman Sachs. The people at Goldman Sachs, by the way, have not been prosecuted. In fact, no one who's run one of the major Wall Street firms behind the meltdown and the exploitation have been charged with anything. Here's what he has to say. We'll be with you in 1 second here with Max Kaiser. And then in a few
who's an independent financial analyst and founder of KarmaBank.com, and Monsef Sheikh Ruhu, who's a professor of international finance at HEC, the Paris International Business School. Hi. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on the program. Max, if I could start with you. I mean, what is it about Goldman Sachs? How does it manage to turn the figures around like that?
Well, Goldman Sachs are scum. I mean, that's the bottom line. They basically have co-opted the U.S. government. They've co-opted the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve functionality. They've co-opted the Obama administration. Barack Obama, dances to Goldman Sachs' tune. And they are really crooked and abominable in what they've done. You just remember Hank Paulson held Congress hostage, took him in the back room and said, give us $700 billion. We're going to crash this market. He's an arsonist. He's an outlaw, and yet he's given praise.
Ex-Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, who was CEO at Goldman Sachs.
Sure, but if you go down the list, they're all Goldman Sachs scum, whether it's Hank Paulson, whether it's Geithner has very close ties to Goldman Sachs, and of course, all these banking bonuses are paid out to all their cronies who are Goldman Sachs scum, and America, for some reason, has allowed this coup d'etat to take place, a silent coup d'etat, where the Goldman Sachs and their friends now control the U.S. government, and they are manipulating prices.
Okay, Mike. Monsef, that's a pretty abrasive view of Goldman Sachs. Do you go along with that?
I will revert only to the financial world and to the financial figures, and we notice that Goldman Sachs is merely having the fruits of its very, very important strategic choice. Let's not forget that Goldman Sachs has warned the world community about the dangers of the instruments, the toxic instruments that were being used, and that were called the subprimes. And Goldman Sachs published a report a year and a half ago saying that the subprime problem was going to cost the world $2,000 billion. So Goldman Sachs was the only investment bank in the United States that didn't get into this game selling and buying empty boxes.
Yes, but they created many of these empty boxes. They then bet against their own clients to whom they sold these empty boxes. They coerced the federal government to get rid of their main competitors in Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, who were selling these empty boxes. They co-opted foreign banks who owned these empty boxes, who went through tremendous pain and suffering. And they are also now caught in front-running every single trade on the New York Stock Exchange with this high-frequency trading scandal. They're literally stealing $100 million a day. Goldman Sachs is stealing every day on the floor of the exchange. They should be in The Hague. They should be taken up on financial terrorism charges, and they should all be thrown in jail. They're scum.
I wouldn't be as extreme, but
just
to say that the situation
wouldn't be as extreme. Well, when you steal $150 million a day, and you're bankrupting people and exploiting everyone, then maybe it's time someone like Max Kaiser stood up and was extreme, because what he's saying is true, and you won't see any of the other people out there saying what he says and the way he says it. Good for him. You'll see him in the new feature film, Poverty Inc., where we address all these issues of inequality, who's behind them, and I can promise you, you'll see in detail how your favorite corporate Republican and Democrats and major corporate sponsors are all involved, and the media complicit as well. And hopefully, right now, I don't think we have any more seats available, so I won't mention the number to call. And we're doing it also as a fundraiser for one of our sister stations. Before we go to our guest, who's going to be here in a moment, I want to play you a short clip from a leading pro advocate of vaccines, a PhD immunologist, professor, highly touted. But here's something no one heard.
So the science seems fairly clear that for the first year of life, probably, the immunization is not stimulating the kind of response that we expect it to stimulate. So
sure.
What's the rationale for continuing to do that if it's not doing what it's supposed to do?
The vaccines are given at pediatric wellness visits, and the idea is that you are training a parent to bring their child in at all the pediatric wellness visits, and that it's only the year visit that actually is truly important, but that for most parents, you're not going to get them to bring their kid in if they don't come in at 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months. And so it's actually more of a training thing. It's interesting. I was on the phone with Mott County Public Health last week with one of their vaccine nurses. And she was like, oh, you're talking about vaccines? Make sure you tell them they have to do that year shot because the first three don't work. And I was like, yeah, I know.
Listen to what she just said, so you're clear on this. Not a single scientist, immunologist, infectious disease specialist, or medical doctor has ever been able to establish a scientific foundation for the vaccination of infants less than a year old. That's because the science is clear. There is no basis whatsoever, either through empirical or any type of measurable evidence supporting the practice. As one immunologist just stated, the reason vaccines are administered at pediatric wellness visits is to train the parent. Infants in their first year mostly depend upon generalized nonspecific immunity, including immunoglobulins from breast milk to protect their young bodies from infection. Vaccines are not only ineffective in the first year of life, but they cause harm through synergistic toxicity and the state of immune overload. And despite this, the medical establishment insists administering 19 shots containing 24 vaccines to infants on the 2, 4, and 6 month pediatric visit. So this is PhD immunologist, pro-vaccine person, revealed the shocking information in a panel of experts discussing vaccines. They were all pro-vaccines. And you just heard her laughing about the fact that, where first she said, yeah, we know. I don't know if you heard that, but then at the end she said it again. Quote, here's the transcript that I have. I just want to make sure that you hear it. Quote, the commentator. So the science seems fairly clear that for the first year of life, probably, that the immunization is not stimulating the kind of response we expect to stimulate. Her response, true. So what is the rationale for continuing to do that if it's not doing it what it's supposed to be doing? Quote, the vaccines are given at pediatric wellness visits. The idea is that you are training the parent to bring their child in at all the pediatric wellness visits. And then she laughs and says, make sure that you tell them to do that because it's not working in the second, fourth, and 6 month shots don't work. Yeah. I know, end quote. All right. So what we have is one of the greatest medical scientific frauds in history. We will debate any human being, any prophet, anyone on my show, on the fraud of these vaccines to infants 1 year and younger. And I have already put the word out to this doctor to come on the show and debate me on this. I consider these people guilty of crimes against humanity, and they should be brought up on charges. You've heard it now. Now it's your conditioning whether you go ahead and vaccinate or not. Remember what I said earlier. It's not cancer, heart disease, stroke that kills you. It's your belief system. And our mass immunization program is nothing but one massive fraud. I'm Gary Knoll. To our guest in a moment, but first in studio, we have two individuals. Real quick, the young man, 24 years of age, who I found sleeping homeless out on the streets every night, brought him on the air. He told his story, and some people reached out to help him. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
And what has happened?
I just wanted to come on and thank everyone that's been helping me out because it's made a huge difference. one of the most important things I was able to do was get my driver's license. You know, I had to pay the DMV for tickets I owed them and for replacement. And it's huge because not only do I have a proper ID now that will keep me from being a vagrant in the eyes of the police and stuff like that, but I can also use it to get work, and I've been able to use it to get a place to stay. So within the next couple of days, I'll be having my own room in Queens for the next 3 months.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Your name is Brent?
Yeah.
Okay, Brent. You see, there's a... You're dealing with millions of homeless people, but all you have to do is help one to show it can make a difference. So you're out there. Now when you get on your feet, you'll be sleeping in a place. You won't have to be sleeping on the streets with the vortex coming. And remember, turn around and help another human being.
Of course.
All right? Good for you.
Thank
Glad
you.
To see that you're up on your feet. In the studio is a man named Raz. He is 65 years of age. He is a craftsman. He's a master jeweler, mainly cufflinks. I don't know if he makes other things, but... He came by the other day, and I've seen him, you know, at lectures and around for 20 years. Always meticulously dressed, always in a suit and shirt, and he told me a story that he had gotten injured, and got laid on his rent, and then was evicted and homeless. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and that the landlord. You know, evicted you, and your jewelry, your stones that you make your living from were in your house, but because you hadn't had an opportunity to make anything, you hadn't been able to sell things to pay your rent, so you're back, though you had lived there for 40 years and had never been late in your rent, correct?
Yes.
So now you're homeless, and what does it mean to you today to look at life from the perspective of not having a home, not having a place to take a shower or have food, as you did just 2 weeks ago when you were still in a home, even though you were late on your rent?
Well, I have always been working since I was 13. I've always created things and sold in the market. I created the most beautiful line of cufflinks in the U.S. that I sold to high-end jewelry stores and men's shops and gift shops. And what happened in 2000, in October of 2000, I had a severe car accident which set me back a few years. And then in 2012, I had another accident which created a devastation on my physical activity. But I'm a talented person. I have gone around and I saw a lot of people who don't have talent and just work minimum wage or that and became poor. I see what they're suffering from and how they're suffering. And I'm a talented person. I just have a small setback, which I'm going to overcome. But the situation really is very hard for so many people I have experienced in going to different cities and towns.
Well, now you're saying about all those people that you might not have given two thoughts to, you're one of those people now.
Yes.
And it changes your perception.
I want to share something with you, Gary, that... In the late 70s and early 80s, for 3 years, I got involved with seven mayors in Bergen County, New Jersey, helping them to help homeless people, families with problems, and also people who were hungry. And I even went to a lot of homes who didn't have food. And at the time, I was doing very well, so I bought them food and helped them. At this time, I'm in need of help, and it's amazing. That's how things turn around.
So from what I understand, you owe more rent for those months, and you can't come up with that. And so the landlord has locked you out, and your stuff is locked in.
Yes.
So you have no place to accept your car. You're at least healthy enough now to return to your work. Okay, so what I would suggest, if people in the audience would like to help with this artist who makes the most beautiful cufflinks, I've seen his cufflinks, and get back on his feet, especially at this time of year, call our office at 646-926-5422. I know your biggest concern is that if you could just get the materials back, you could start to make some stuff for this season and get it in some stores. I had my lawyer, Scott, call your landlord, and the good news is that you can get your stuff back.
Yes.
Today. Go back today.
I can get the stuff back.
Yes. Just go get your stuff back today. All right?
Yes.
You still won't have a place to stay, but at least you'll have your materials.
Yes.
So you can start to work. All right?
Yes, but I also need a place to work.
I understand. But yesterday, you didn't have a place to work and you didn't have your materials.
Yes.
All right? Now you have your materials.
Yes.
All right? Appreciate the gifts you have.
I do.
Do you?
Yes.
All right. We'll see.
I appreciate your generosity for all over 20 years that I know you. You have been open and giving to life and liberating life and being generous continuously to so many thousands of people. I'm really grateful to you for your presence.
Well, let's try to get you some help so you can continue your craft. And I'm sure the lessons you have learned, you will then be more sensitive every day to everyone else. Because I want people to realize how close everyone can be to being in a position where they need help from others, where
yes.
they never thought people pride themselves in being self-sufficient.
Yes.
In today's world, you can't take any of this for granted. I wish you all the best, Ross.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Luann, hi. We're going to go to our guest in just a minute, but we'll say hello to Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I have to tell you, I've been volunteering my time to help to get people signed up for your retreats, and I've been doing it for a good couple of years. And the other day you announced it
yesterday
your latest retreat on the air
to help our sister station. Yes.
Yes, and you know that all a number of us are volunteering our time.
I'm volunteering. We're all volunteering.
Yes, and I have to tell you, I have never had so many people respond in one day. I pretty much filled up the retreat. So
that's
many
great
people.
News. Great news for the station.
Yes,
you can pay salaries, and that's what it was about. Helping the station because they didn't make enough during the fund drive. They're way short.
Yes.
Good.
So, but I will say, though, that what I always do is I always, usually I have people call me. I'll leave my number, but I'm telling you, we're pretty full right now. I'm at 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that we're full. Let's say hello to Dr. Mario Martinez, a clinical psychologist specializing in psychoneuroimmunology and anti-aging, and he's developed the theory of biocognitive science and psychology, a mind-body theory that explains how thoughts and their biological expressions can co-emerge within a cultural environment, and he is the founder of the Biocognitive Science Institute and in Uruguay, and we're happy to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. It's good to talk to you again.
Most of our listeners will not have heard of biocognitive therapy or theory and the research being done in psychoimmunotechniques exploring the relationship between our beliefs and thoughts and our physical health, particularly regarding our immune system. So please begin by briefly explaining what biocognitive therapy is and the interrelationship between the beliefs we hold about ourselves and the world as part of the culture we grow up in, our biological bodies and our genetic preponderances. And in your reply, also explain what is meant by our bioinformational field and the role it plays in either staying healthy or triggering illness and disease. The form is yours.
Well, we pretty much know that the mind affects the body, and what I'm trying to bring in here is what is it that affects the mind? And what affects the mind is the culture, because mind and body are communicating, but they're communicating within a cultural context, and the culture shapes the perception. The perception shapes the brain, and it goes back and forth in a co-authoring way. So, and I'll explain, I'll give you examples, but just a general idea. The bioinformational field is, what I mean by that is that we are biological beings, and we're constantly taking information in, not as a computer, not a data processing system, but taking information in to find meaning, to find relevance in a context. So it's a bioinformational field that's constantly bringing information in, accepting, rejecting, and in that process, we create illnesses or we create health. Not in a conscious way. We don't try to get sick consciously, but we teach our bodies to get sick. We teach our minds to get sick. And the other side is that we can teach our mind-body to gain the health that we all were meant to have.
Well, every culture throughout the world, therefore, would have a bioinformational field. From the time children are able to speak and walk, families will begin indoctrinating them in their cultural beliefs and their religion, storybooks that convey the myth of our respective cultures. So this indoctrination process begins during the very early stages of a child's development. Then our school systems further indoctrinate children to certain beliefs. And for example, today, the U.S. public schools, Columbus is still heralded as a hero, whereas history clearly shows he was a tyrant. There are numerous examples, and what is lost throughout this developmental process is the inability of a child to learn the skills to think critically. Within the principles of biocognitive theory, how would you define America's cultural history affecting the average American's immune system and more or less set a person up for coming down with an illness, either physical or mental or emotional? And what does this tell us about our immune system's larger role in our lives? Your research even suggests that there may be a strong moral and ethical component to our immune system. So go into that more deeply, please.
Okay. If you look anthropologically, if you look at, for example, the American culture with the Japanese culture, the American culture is definitely more individualistic. The Japanese is more collective. I think that there's an obsession with here in the U.S. when there's an obsession with wellness, but wellness or health, but coming from the outside. If you take a pill, if you have a shot, if you all from the outside. And there's also an obsession with staying young, but again with things from the outside, from products. And that, of course, is, as you have mentioned many times, it's pretty much maintained by a market, a consumerist market, and there's nothing wrong with that. But as long as you presented as something that it's more than what it is, then it's really not helping people very much. So what I've done in working with centenarians all over the world, and in the U.S., by the way, it's the fastest growing segment of the population in the U.S. There are 80,000 centenarians, people who live 100 or older. And what I've concentrated on is not just people who live long, but who live long healthy. So I really investigate healthy centenarians. And what I find with them is that they achieve what we're trying to achieve the wrong way. They achieve health and they achieve longevity because they go from the inside. It's a belief system that they have, the subcultures that they create of wellness, and the way that they view themselves, not obsessed with life, but the way they live life indirectly gives them longevity and gives them health. So it has to come from the inside, but you have to have people that support that. You have to have what I call the cultures of wellness. And in my new book, I explained, I have one chapter about creating cultures of wellness, because if you don't, then what it does is it kills the hope, or it kills a possible placebo. Let's say you're told that your doctor, which is an authority figure, tells you, look, I think that you have this type of illness, but if you do this and this and this, if you don't need to take all the medications that they're usually given, but if you do these kind of lifestyle changes and these kinds of belief changes, you will get better. But then you go somewhere and that person says, oh, no, that person's a charlatan. They don't know what they're talking about. You need to take this medicine. It kills the placebo effect. It kills and the placebo is the beginning of health, the beginning of healing. Nothing wrong with placebo. In fact, we need it. But conventional science sees it as a nuisance variable. So you see, it's a belief system that doesn't allow you to get healthy from the inside.
What are some of the more damaging beliefs and emotional attributes that we adopt and accept as true from our culture? And are there certain illnesses that are associated with different toxic beliefs? And I'm asking our syndicated shows around the world, we're going to extend this interview a little longer, so normally there's an extra 5 minutes at the end of the show, so please allow these extra comments to come on, because this is where his most important insights are going to come from. Please continue.
Yes, well, one of them is the life sciences that are promoting a myth that growing older is an inevitable deterioration of mind and body. That's not true. I've been able to show that with many, many centenarians that I've seen, and also people that are living a life in a way that gets them out of that average mindset. It was thought that we don't grow neurons, that you're born with a certain amount of neurons, which are the as you know, the brain cells, and that's not true. You continue to grow neurons. It was thought that if you have cancer in the family, most likely you'll die of cancer. That's not true. Those are propensities that you have that can be triggered by the belief system and the lifestyle and the environment that you choose to live. And the deterioration doesn't happen that way because these centenarians are not, most of them are cognitively intact, and they usually have better memory than people 50 years younger. But what they do is that they believe that growing older is not something that deteriorates. And one of the things questions that you were asking, which is really important, is that what is it that happens that makes people deteriorate? Number one is early retirement. Number two is having a life without meaning. Number three is to think that once you don't have to work anymore and you go watch a sunset in Florida, that you're going to be in good shape. And actually, people live 4 to 5 years when they retire without meaning. And the most important part of this is that we grow older by the passing of time, but we age based on what we do with that time, on the cultural beliefs that we choose to have and we choose to live. An example, we have portals. Middle age is a portal. And what ages people is the attribution they give to the things that happen to them, the cost that they give. So if you're middle-aged, you begin to give a different attribution to things that happen to you. Let's say that you used to run or that you're running, and in middle age, the first day that you start running or a week after you're middle-aged, your knee hurts. And the attribution, because you're in that portal of middle age that's created by the culture, not by biology, you'll say, well, I'm getting a little older. After all, I'm middle age. I shouldn't be running as much as I am. And what are you doing then? You're creating an aging process because you're taking away the possibility of continuing to do well. There are centenarians that walk miles. They do things that they couldn't do 20 years before, because what they're doing is they're improving their life with time rather than giving it attributions that it because you're old, you can't do this, you can't do that. So it's really what you attribute, what happens to you, based on the culture. And one of the things that I suggest is you break away from that. And if your knee hurts, find out what you can do about it independent of the age you have.
Good ideas. Really appreciate that. And it's all in the Mind-Body Code, How to Change the Beliefs That Limit Your Health, Longevity, and Success. Website is biocognitive.com. Thanks a lot for being with us today, Dr. Mario Martinez.
Thank you, Gary. And congratulations on the work you do.
Thank you. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now back in studio is Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from Marilyn, and she says, as a young 17-year-old college student, I used to eat every meal, every dinner at your Fertile Earth restaurant. It was the best food I ever ate and the best conversations I've ever had with people. And her question is, are you ever going to do another restaurant?
I've considered doing another restaurant all the time. I walk up and down Broadway a lot, and I see how many empty places there are. I will do another gourmet vegan restaurant when the bubble bursts. There's a commercial real estate bubble. They're getting $160, $200 a square foot.
Oh, my.
That means you would have to do $3,000 a day just to pay the rent and to break even in a lot of places between your staff and your rent. And there's no purpose to that. So when this comes to an end, and it will in the near future, where places are reasonable again, then I will. But until that time, no, because then you're just working for the landlords. Last night, for example, I walked down to Lincoln Square, and then when I was looking at how many, I counted over 58 empty places.
Wow.
And the places I see that are coming to fill those empty places are little boutique places. And I'm thinking, how in the world are they going to survive? Some place selling, you know, a little juice bar. You don't make a lot of profit on juices, you know, and so you'd have to sell 200 juices a day. The average place is not going to be able to do that. But people want to try, and I certainly support people's efforts. But you got to think long and hard about what it costs to do a business, especially in New York City. most expensive place imaginable in the United States to do business. I would love to see a renaissance in Manhattan and other areas where small businesses could come back into neighborhoods. But that won't happen until the whole power of the landlord is taken away and communities are allowed to thrive again. Let's say hello to Utrees Lead. Hi, Utrees.
Hello, Gary. Hi, Luann. It's Veterans Day today, and a reminder that we are the ones missing in action.
Okay, now she's trying to screw with her brains. We're missing in action. And she can say that because she's hiding under the eucalyptus tree somewhere in South Carolina. Back in a moment with Utrees.